It is September 24th, 2014, and we are sitting in the home of our narrator for today. I'll have him introduce himself. We're in Thunder Bay, Ontario. So if you could introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit about your connection to grain elevators.
Well, my connection to grain elevators is I spent 3 years with C.D. Howe, where we did the new edition on Canada Malt, Manitoba Pool, and P&H Elevator. With Howe, I was working under John McNeil, who had been with Howe since 1928, and his job was field chief between the engineer and the builder, the contractor at all times.
Could I have you say your name so that we have that on record?
Oh, my name is Philip Lebrun.
So let's the only other item that we had talked about before the interview was you also had a connection with elevator demolition.
Well, we had a connection. According to Walter Cronkite and from NBC or CB, whatever the hell it was. We took down the Empire Elevator, but nobody had taken down an elevator in one shot.
Okay, can we come back to that? Because I'd like to start the interview with just talking about your beginnings. So,
Well, I was a contractor, and they wanted to get the people that owned it wanted to get rid, take it down.
But even if we go right back to the beginning, were you born in Thunder Bay?
Oh Lord, no.
So
I
where
was born in Winnipeg and spent a lot of time in the United States in the pipeline industry and construction.
So how did you end up in Thunder Bay?
Well, I was that's rather unique. I was working for Missouri Dredge and Dock, which did river crossings. We were doing river crossings in various states for the gas companies. I probably covered most states. And we ended up, I ended up in Canada, in Vancouver. We had two Fraser, two Trans-Canada Pipeline, I think it was. They had two crossings under the Fraser River. Okay? In the meantime, my wife was living, oh, when we earlier, when we, the pipeline from the border to in the United States, 326.7 miles. We were living in Bemidji. Now, there's a lot I can't remember really
That's
detail,
fine. Doesn't need to be. It just
but
gives
you
us a sense of
can't.
how you.
We were living in Bemidji. I was always on the road. And then when that line finished, I went to Arkansas with the company. And my wife was, because with pipelining, you keep moving. And you don't have 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off or anything like that. So she said, that's enough. That's it. I quit. So she went back to Winnipeg. And I was in BC, and they wanted me to, the company wanted me, that is, to, after that finished, to go to take over a new company in Mexico. And I mind you, I had constant telephone with my wife, you know, I was figuring out. And she said, wow, that was bad.
Not quite what she had in mind.
Yeah, she didn't have mind Mexico, but I didn't really. I said, I think I gotta quit this pipeline thing, because I'm going to lose my two little kids and my wife. And my wife moved here to Fort William with my father and my mother, who were developing a dumper for the grain business. I know that's a little odd, but...
No, that's very interesting. So how did your dad get involved with that?
How did he get...
Yeah, how did your father get involved with...
Oh, it was on the design and the manufacturing and the rigging and making it work.
Was that the C-bar dumper? Well, with C.D. Howe?
No.
No? No. Okay, because there were two of them
the
developed.
The first one was... they put it in over there in Westport, one of the big elevators.
The Grand Trunk?
I can't remember.
I think, yeah.
They put it in there. Anyway.
What was your dad's background?
He was a mechanical designer, big, around anything mechanical, big. Hmm. Yeah.
Did he work for a company here, or was he just coming on his own?
No.
Do you know?
He was hired by
Searle.
Okay. I got it.
Okay.
Boy, if my wife was sitting there, she would have hit it. Searle Grain.
Yes, okay.
Put in that, wherever the hell that was. I didn't pay much attention. I was up there.
Yeah.
Then I came back here to Fort William. It's only Fort William when I came back here. Port Arthur was over there. And I worked for several companies.
What was your background? Did you have any official training in construction?
I'm like Murray Fleming, who was the president of C.D. Howe. He didn't have he was educated. His engineering came from the United States, and he couldn't get a, they would, he ignored them.
He couldn't get the transfer of his papers.
Yeah, get the Canadian. Well, I never worried about that. I didn't care because nobody wanted me to, be a design engineer or anything like that. They wanted me for experience, machine experience, heavy equipment. But anyways, C.D. Howe wanted me when I came here.
Did you meet him?
No, I never met him. I only met John McNeil. Now, John McNeil handled all the outside work all the years since 1928 for C.D. Howe. John McNeil hired me. And we worked good together.
Can you recall who else was at C.D. Howe at the time?
Sure, Murray Fleming was a...
Was he the head guy?
Yeah, he owned it, didn't he? Probably.
Probably when Mr. Howe went into politics.
Oh, sure. I think Murray owned it. And there's Harry Olson, was Nickens' chief. And they had an electrical designer, Sid Halter. I think he just died a few years ago.
And what projects were they working on when you first... Well, first of all, when did you come here? When did you move here to join your wife?
My wife wrote it down somewhere.
Approximately.
I'll have to find that piece of paper.
Do you want to just put it on pause? I want to put that on. So that was 57 to 1960, because you said you were with them for three years. And what were they working on at the time?
Canada Malt was the first. That's what where I went. But John was running the outside period. He had several things going, and I was his assistant.
What were they doing at Canada Malt, putting in the malt plant?
They put that big extension this way, putting on the reel, putting the reel, all the machinery, everything in. And the four tanks in between, and then we were doing Manitoba.
Which one?
The one that's right beside, you know, right next to
P&H.
No, P&H way down there. Yeah.
Oh, right beside the
Canada Malt.
Canada Malt, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Pool 3, I think that was.
Pool 3, yeah, I wouldn't rather that.
So, you said you came to Thunder Bay, Fort William, from your experience with pipeline installation.
Yeah, but.
So, okay.
With the pipeline, there's a lot of other work. You know, there's the pumping stations, huge pumping stations, small pumping stations. There's the river crossings and the a lot of various work. We did a lot of blasting, a lot of...
underwater work, too.
Yeah, and underwater work, yeah.
Yeah, so there is a transfer to elevator work.
To me it was, but after I did one climb, you know, but say, I had no problem. But in the meantime, John went to the hospital, and he never came out. And Murray Fleming asked me, well, he phoned my wife because he said, will you have him phone me? So I was just doing a crossing on the, with the American Pipeline Company up northern Ontario. And so I phoned him and he said, I'd like you to, John is it, you and him, you seem to be the same. And I really want to see this P&H through. And you know, there's been problems. Yes, I said, I know there are problems. I see them coming up. I ran lines on them, but they didn't do nothing about it. He says, is there any, would you be interested? I said, sure. Because, you know, we're not going to be there forever.
So what was the job with P&H? What were they doing?
Oh, P&H was all those new tanks.
Okay.
But
outward there, yeah, right?
Yeah, it came towards inland, see?
Oh, okay.
Came to inland. And remember, they had a long dock there that ships could tie up. But, you know, there was no, the elevators were back there. So they had problems.
What kind of problems?
Well, you know, when you start driving piling, and that dock was built, that long dock, and I don't know when the hell it was built.
Probably late 1910s or early 20s.
You could find out, yeah. But I haven't. But I know one thing, it was all wood and dark and that. And I had, before I had left, before they had even got them a contractor, I had gone to do that crossing for Missouri Valley, who were operating in Canada. I had ran a line. Had it set up, and I turned it over to a young engineer. A young guy, he wasn't an engineer yet, I guess he is now, I don't know. I turned it over to him because I'm going to leave. Because they hadn't awarded anything,
mm-hmm.
But I said that there's movement in that dock, in the thing, there's movement, and I believe that you start piling, wooden piling, you know, it was 40-foot, generally 40-foot friction pile. You drive it down, and you're going to shove that. Well, I don't know what happened, but I had left him to Joe, the young guy, Wojcie, the information. He gave it to Olson at the office. But anyway, the contractor, finally, it was let. And the contractor went ahead, as you always do. You start here and you drive towards the water. You were driving the wooden piling. The dock started moving. Like, moving.
Vibrating, sort of, or actually moving
no,
out?
No, it's been moving out like that. But I didn't know about that. I ran the line saying that there'll be movement and it's under, you're going to have to do various other things besides when you're driving. Well, but anyway, I wasn't there anymore, so I didn't care. But when Murray Fleming phoned, and I phoned him back, they had already put a, and they got a stop. So anyway, I came back, pull out all the piles Carter Construction from Toronto were their contractor, but Thunder Bay Harbor was doing the driving.
That's pretty pricey.
Well,
to pull it out, but you had to.
Well, it's not hard to pull. You've got to have enough crane, but he had enough crane power because he had a steam.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Thunder Bay Harbor had that steam. It's right, their yard was right there, you see. Yeah, you got lots of power with the steam, but they pulled them out. Now, the system that you've got to use is you can't redrive those piles, so you got to have another bunch because you've already hammered hell out of them. So what you do is you start your driving and you start excavating in the inner side of the dock, the material, where it's all bunching. Just keep excavating until you get your piles in.
What type of wood were the piles? Was there a special type that was the best, sort of?
Well, it was just forestry wood. It was just the white pine, eh?
From this area?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, get them. A lot of them were coming maybe 30, 40 miles. Yeah, but they were a friction pile. A different, you know, between a friction pile and if you've got the right material down below, a clay that is not is solid. When you get to that point and you take 40 bangs on that hammer, that creates a friction pile. And now you try and pull that out, it's hard. You got to have a lot of horses to get it out. And not only that, it'll take any load. Most of the piles were loads for maybe 10, 40, 50 ton, but you could put 140 ton on a window pile. So they drove the piles, and we put up the tanks, you know, put up. I had experience, of course, with the hydraulic jacks that were Swedish. They were patented in Sweden in 1890 or something. And wonderful. And we climbed it, and Carter was happy. I was happy. The Prosvita was just across the street for lunch.
Et cetera, et cetera.
But it worked very well. And the dock was, you know, we just ran a line behind it, you know, and left the dock. Nothing matter, because the dock isn't going to carry anything other than people walking them down. And that was the end of that. So I left and went contracting on my own.
And was there anything that caused you to leave C.D. Howe?
Well, I thought C.D. Howe, they didn't have much work, and they had that big deal going on in Argentina, and you keep looking at me, see? Like, all I want, eh? I can hardly wait to get to Argentina.
Not?
Yeah.
It was just that much farther than Mexico.
Yeah, maybe bad enough there.
Yeah. So the project in Argentina, was that the grain elevator there?
Oh, yeah. I forget who took it over. One of the guys in the office of C.D. Howe, he was second to Olson, but I didn't know him.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really familiar, unless you were, I was dealing with a subject that when I came to the office, I had to talk to somebody about it, some correction or something, you know what I mean? Otherwise, I never had much.
You were almost just a private contractor there.
Yeah, I wasn't highly interested in office people.
And office politics.
Yes, and there's lots of it. But
The Manitoba Pool Elevator Project, what was that installing extra bins as well?
You know, I met when we finished the P&H elevator, the Prince Arthur Hotel had a dining room, just one floor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They had a big meeting, and as a matter of fact, there was how officials from Montreal came, and you know, I met. I was rather surprised. I met an old guy, and his name was C.D. Howe. He was really old. But that's the last I wasn't going anywhere. I was going to stay right here.
And so let's just talk about grain elevators in general then. You mentioned, before we move on, you mentioned the patented system that, did you say it was Swedish?
Oh, the jacks.
Yeah, now I understood, was that for pouring concrete, jacking up the forms?
Yeah, what happened, you had these hydraulic jacks, they're on the rods, eh? And they lift the forms. Your forms are only, say, 4 or 5 feet.
Now I understood that the form, that hydraulic jack system was actually patented in Canada. Was this a different system, do you know?
Yeah, it was robbed in Canada. The jacks actually belonged to the Swedes. But they didn't do anything.
Really?
No.
Because I was just reading an article this morning where they're talking about the two fellows who worked for, was it, Barnett Record, maybe? Or Stewart Company of Canada? And they actually gave the names of the couple of fellows who were supposedly had designed it for the elevator.
They had
in 1906 or something.
Yeah, but they had there was several different you could use, but there's only one that I would buy, or even to this day, and that's a single rod, the jack that you can control. This just like that, you know what I mean? And just everything has to go up. No, you can't do that when you're pouring concrete. You've got to be able to control it. And you want to control every jack. That's the secret. That's why P&H went up.
Now, what would describe the process there then? Because let me just tell you pictures I've seen of elevators that were built. Mm-hmm. Oh, if you were working at the end of the 50s, these were being built in the early 20s, so that's 30 years.
Oh, yeah.
And they were still rolling wheelbarrows around, dropping cement off. Yeah. How had things improved when you were working on building the silos?
Well, we had a system, you know, the tower, the concrete truck dumps in there, and we got a central system of running each
sort of a conveyor belt system.
I guess you could call it a conveyor belt, but actually it was just a slide.
Okay.
You know.
So does the tower go up then as the...
No, you control that. That's a secret. If you take her too green, as they used to call it, you know, you might have what you call a fallout.
Too green being putting wet concrete on top of stuff that's not sufficiently set?
Well, one of the big problems they had was kind of cement. That kind of, I cut them off, but I got an engineering outfit that was doing the Nelson River Dam there. To 7 years they took it to build that. I got one of their engineers to come in and test Canada cement. There was 4 cars of cement on the thing. They went and tested it, and they said it'll destroy the 5-1 radio, 5-1 ratio con. You can't use that. It's so hot, it dissolves the water. So I cut it off, but I knew this was going to hit the fan, and like my, you know, threatening and every other damn thing, but I was getting a little sick of it, but I don't mind a good fight. And Murray Fleming sat there in Montreal and said, "You got to go with LeBrun. God, he's got all the evidence. Change the cement company." That's what we did.
So who took over? What cement company? Was Irwin cement around at the time?
Yeah, I can't remember the name, but they had their building right off the on the river there for the. It's still there. It's a cement. There's St. Lawrence and I can't remember.
Oh, okay. Right on the Pacific, you know, whatever,
yeah,
you that know. Goes over the bridge, yeah, and onto the island.
Yeah. But,
well, there was an Irwin cement company.
Irwin. Irwin was the, the mixer did the, but it wasn't nothing, it wasn't his fault.
Ah. He was sort of the truck and the delivery?
He had the delivery truck, and he brought it, and when you test it, no. But then when you start seeing that you're in your climb, things don't feel right. Stop everything.
So that's where your experience comes in handy.
So I got this, I can't remember the name, they're a hell of a big outfit in Winnipeg, but they had that 7-year dam contract, and that whole dam is nothing but is it concrete.
Mm-hmm.
They knew every angle, and the guy came. I didn't have permission from Howe yet, but I thought I'd better cover my own butt. I brought him in and he tested the cars. He says that what's happened is, they didn't let it stand long enough when they conditioned it, however they he called it by different names. And I didn't care.
Yeah, I have an interest in concrete and cement. So the test you were talking about that they would look at was beyond a slump test then.
Oh, yeah. The destruction, you see, there's a five, he called it the number five program, and it violated it so bad, it was so hot, that when you did put water in it, it
steam rises.
Yeah, right.
Huh. So. But the project was finished, and it was Were Parrish and Heinbecker happy?
Yeah, Parrish and Heinbecker. Yeah, that's the name.
Yes.
P&H.
Yeah.
They were, at this Prince Arthur thing, there were all kinds of booze and drinks and everybody, you know, like a big party. And one of the, it was a Heinbecker, they took turns operating their business. There's two families. There's the Parrish family. I'm only listening to the conversations. And this guy was Heinbecker, who was a good guy. Easy going thing. And I've never heard anything bad about the elevator since.
Can I tell you a quick story about the elevator? Because we interviewed Mr. Parrish.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it was when an elevator tipped into the river,
mm-hmm,
or into the lake, that I think that might have started an examination of the stability of the elevators along the waterfront.
Oh, yes.
So they did Parrish and Heinbecker brought in engineers to take a look at, you know, the how solid their elevator was. And there was a report done, don't know who did it, saying that the elevator was tipping. Mr. Parrish didn't think it would be tipping, probably knew the good work that you did, and had another engineer brought in. And as it turned out, I guess they were using the breakwater as one of their siding, and it was determined that the breakwater was moving and not the elevator. So you did a good job.
But I didn't want to name anybody or take, you know, everybody makes
Everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah.
Yes. The secret is being able to admit it, right?
I have. Have you not noticed even lately when that mall down east, how many engineers checked that?
When it collapsed.
How indecent. When I went with Bill Peach, who was second in command of CDL, over to the river, over by the swing bridge. Do you remember the elevator that was there?
The Patterson one?
Yeah. And he said, we're going to look, something's going, there seems to be movement. Well, I said, where there's movement, it's going to continue. But he says, what would you say? What would be the easiest way? I says, on this one you could get, there's a separation where you could get at least 5.5 feet of working area in to get to that 4 foot of concrete floor. And I said, Bill, so he says, you look after, I'll get Thunder Bay Harbor, they got one of those drills. And we'll check and we'll find out.
And was this on the dock?
This is under the mill, under the tanks.
Oh, okay, so what do they call it? The bed, sort of.
Yeah, yeah. So what we did is we drilled and we found out that the earth had left the pile. Now, the pile rots. You know, that's 401, 603, I think, was it. That's it. It's got to maintain that. Otherwise, it's, and there was as much as 3 feet, 2 feet under. So they stopped. They shut down that elevator. I gave the report to Bill Peach. I don't know how to get around.
So when you say there's 2 feet or 3 feet, the piles had rotted down?
They are rotting down.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because the material is going out through the dock.
What would prevent that?
What would prevent it?
Is that when they do something, like Monica and I spent a lot of time scanning in pictures of a revetment of a dock at Searle Elevator.
Oh, yeah.
So is that revetment what would
fix
that problem or at least stop it from getting worse?
Yes, sure. But it was too late. That's too late. Those piles, how are you going to renew those piles? No, it was too late. They shut it down.
Mm.
And lucky they did because that's where the swing bridge is. It would be a lot of fun, eh? Soon the elevator goes on, takes its CNR out, they'll be in court. They'll probably be fighting for the next 20 years.
So that could explain why they actually demolished the elevator then.
What they did is they put it up for bid to demolish. I wasn't interested in it. I wasn't interested in it because of the fact that damn bridge. And I can dump them. But I'm not so happy about that bridge. I never have been.
Well, you see, you might have done everybody a favor.
Yeah, put the bridge in there, too. Yeah.
So, we're referring to the current day issues of rebuilding or fixing up the bridge after the fire.
Well, yes, I know I haven't. The railroad committed. I mean, how they're getting away with it. Well, I know why they're getting away with it, because we got the federal government backing all heavy industry. And if you want to violate labor, violate this, go ahead and do it, but do it. That bridge is related to Indians. And we've got a prime minister who figures he shouldn't be around anymore. And that is the truth.
Yes. Now, before we get to the Empire Elevator, which is a special story, I just want to get your sense of, if you have any, about what did you think of the grain industry in Thunder Bay when you came here and started working on these things? Just sort of general thoughts, because you came from Winnipeg, right? Yeah, so,
well, I came from Vancouver. I thought to here, well, I didn't go to Winnipeg. I came here because my wife had been. I thought the grain industry at one time, you know, wasn't it? If you, Canada was shipping more grain out of Thunder Bay than any place in the world. It was just money, 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 money. And then there was a slowdown, and then it picked up again. I kind of thought it was like paper mills. Of course, you can't say anything because everybody comes from, was raised somehow with somebody who worked at a paper mill, who got you a job, your kid a job, or that. But from my travels, there was a lot of independence. Like in the southern United States, there was only three paper mills, but in less than 2 or 3 years, there was five. You know, it's going to take its toll on us.
Sort of overdevelopment.
Yeah. That's what I thought, but I didn't say anything because...
What did you think about, and we go back to the elevators now, because you had a mechanical construction background, what did you think about sort of their operations?
I thought they, as far as the operators up and their dust control and everything else, I thought they're the best in the business. The guys that are still working it, though some of them are, you know, most of them are dead, but they got new crews. But the elevators are well run. There was no sweat I ever noticed, especially P&H and Cannon Malton, Manitoba Pool. Everything. I could knock it, but I wasn't an expert on it.
Yeah.
I never had. Just putting them up is one thing, but running them is another thing, too. You've got to have the people that are conscientious. And it's a 24-hour day. A lot of those things are shifts. Eh? Mm-hmm.
This is sort of wrapping up the earlier discussion about your dad. So did your dad stay on here then after he finished his work on the C-bar dumper?
Yeah, they got the dumper in, but my dad died in here. He's buried over at this area.
Mountain View? By the mountain?
Do you know where that cemetery is?
off by the paper mill.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, Mountain View.
Mountain View.
Or St. Patrick's, I think, is there.
I've been in there, but I just, for a funeral for my mom, and I put the stone there, you know. But I when I was in Europe, I liked going around looking at the numbers on the stones that are crooked, and you know. And during my experience over several times in a graveyard where they did not know where the graveyard ended and this line, and we were running a pipeline through, my God, there's bodies, but you know, and I said, did you ever see a person that's been dead for, say, 30, 30, 50 years?
Only in horror movies. And is that pretty much it?
Pretty close. Pretty. You know how they say, dust to dust, ashes to ashes? That's what happened, but
we need to do a whole new series on pipeline installation.
But no. But I was just saying, we didn't make too much noise about it. We're a bad bunch, you know.
That'd slow you up for a month or two to bring it to people's attention.
Yeah, some of them.
I should have mentioned it before, but if you could try not hitting the table, because this is a very sensitive thing.
I'm sorry.
No, but that's okay. I didn't want to interrupt you. But since we're heading into the Empire Elevator story,
okay.
I'll probably hold your hands.
Okay. All right.
Now, as I mentioned to you, I had got your name because I was reading some background information on the Empire Elevator, and particularly the demise of the Empire Elevator, which was 1971.
71. Yeah.
Right. So, talking to you on the telephone, you had mentioned that sort of the background history to that, but just tell us the story of how you got involved, who was working with you, and then I'll ask you some specific questions about the actual job.
Well,
so how did you get involved?
I bid it. They put it up for, they want it down. I can't remember the name of the people that own it.
Did the Saskatchewan Wheat Pool still own it?
I don't think so.
Yeah, because they bought it in 1966.
I think they didn't pay taxes or something. I don't know. There's something more to it than that. They want it down. And I didn't care. But everybody takes some buildings down with cranes, balls, and everything else. I thought, boy, I got a hold of my old buddy. And
who was your old buddy, and how was he your old buddy?
Well, how old was he?
No, just how did you meet him?
Oh, from pipeline. He used to do a lot of marine blasting and so on. Yeah.
And what was his name?
Jack LaRoe. He was, the actual story was, I didn't tell anybody what I really was going to do, because that would have caused a lot of trouble with Imperial Oil, there, and then everybody else getting mad at you. So I quietly got a hold of Jack, and he was trying to, he was having a lot of trouble with the insurance companies.
Okay, so are we ready to go?
You're on, sorry.
Oh, okay, yes, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
could you start again just so that
Oh, yeah, the Jackler was a, yeah. He's from Baltimore, was from Baltimore, but I got a hold of him, and we had a little discussion. I said, I got an elevator. He says, it couldn't work here. I'm having a hell of a time for insurance. I said, I don't worry, I got insurance. He says, yeah. I said, sure. So he flew in and stayed here. Him and I kept, I don't know. And we looked at it, and we started drilling, just two drills, but they were the right kind. And
so how do you decide where to drill to give you a good sense of what you're dealing with?
This one was beautiful, but what I thought was when they built it, they had perimeters with concrete beams going right across. It was like shooting fish in a barrel. So when he seen that, I told him, boy, he said, this is, we could put this wherever. Yeah.
Now, when they had the beams going across, does that mean they didn't have that bed that other elevators have? Or that was the foundation for the concrete floor?
No, that was for the floor, because you could get under it. We didn't get under it. We took it from the side, outside. Well, nobody paid much attention to us, because here's a drill, a guy working on a drill, and there's another guy over there. They didn't know. Nobody was asking us what the hell we were doing.
Did you have to do any work in the water at all?
None.
None? Huh. Two drills.
Two drills.
Two core samples, sort of.
Yeah, well, two drills, yeah. And then we got a truckload of dynamite and the caps and the whole thing.
Now,
it took us 31 hours to load it up. But then also, if you remember, when you were looking at this,
the article.
There was a stack, and there was a house here with a steam engine in it that ran a rope drive that ran the elevator. So we figured, well, we'll take it all. We'll send that over here, and then when we finish, our measuring scene was right there. That was just like you looking across there, the street, on that one of those trees that it was sitting there. We said, well, if this goes right, the whole building should end up maybe scattered around that pole, which is right. Right there.
In the picture.
That's it, right there.
Okay. Now, what, so then the,
there's the pole right there.
Yeah. So it would seem to me then, no, what is the most critical thing then to get it to do what you wanted it to do?
Well, you've got water on that side, you got water in the back, you know, and you got the dock. What you want to do is you want to have everything like this table, like you want it all go like this, and it all sound like one bang, you know. That's what it did sound like. A lot of people watched it, I guess, because Jack figured nobody's ever knocked down a grain elevator in the States either. They take big machines and balls, you know, that knock all of it. But he says, this would be a beauty. He says, so he got a hold of one of those guys that had been watching some of his work. And they got a hold of Walter Cronkite. And Walter Cronkite says, wow, that would be a beauty, yeah? Yeah, we'll go along. And they put in there, when they came here, they had that on the top floor of that Royal Edward Hotel, right? But that was, we already had it loaded.
So they took photographs of it?
This is their photographs. That's not mine. I didn't have any. The newspaper, I didn't. But I didn't even have a camera.
But Cronkite's...
They had a helicopter, right? That's it.
Is that what that is up at the top of the... Of course it is.
Yeah.
I thought it was a speck on the paper.
No. It's a helicopter. And they had a crew.
So they just hovered around?
Yeah.
No danger to them?
No.
Sitting up on top of
that? Nothing went up. Everything went this way. Yeah.
Now, I guess when I asked the question about what are critical items, I would assume where you place the dynamite was a pretty specialized...
Well, we had a... Which we always used was a steel-covered, steel-reinforced box. That's it. That's what the dynamite, right off the truck, goes in there.
Just one box, or it gets placed in different places?
Well, this was only a ton.
So one box sitting somewhere in the elevator?
CIL got us the box. The Canadian Industry Limited, they supplied dynamite.
And then what do you do with the dynamite?
We took it out as we were loading it.
And where would you put it?
Into those holes that we drilled. They fit perfect. And with the timing cords on them.
How many holes were eventually drilled then to take the dynamite?
I never counted them, but I would say there was 85. Yeah.
Place just sort of...
No, right straight under.
Okay.
Just the hole underneath.
Every 20 feet or...
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So some kind of measurement, not just where you felt like putting them.
And with the... that was easy, the stack. And, the steam warehouse here that ran the thing, that was easy because we...
So if we take a look at this picture here, which shows the elevator almost coming down completely and the stack starting to turn.
Yeah.
If you wanted this stack to fall here, which you did, you put your dynamite here?
Yeah. Now we had the this area here was loaded, and then we had the shifters, what they call the shifters. When that starts going off, and the shifters, so everything doesn't go into the water. Right?
What are shifters?
They're little fuses that are electric handled, and you can time them right to the split second. And you can handle them with a dial box. We didn't bother, we just lined it up. Building is just a brick building, you know.
And then is it like you see on TV where you press down the handle and away they go? No? How's that set up?
We did. We just a little hand one.
Detonator? Is that what they were called?
Mm-hmm. It's all charged.
And how is it timed?
Oh, yeah. It's... rigged right to the wiring, and it's tested all the time. It's reading all the time. You just press it, there goes everything. And it went perfect because the pole's still exactly there. And we had told them that it's got to hit. And then you got lots of laughs. You guys are mental. And then there's other bad names too. But
I'm curious, when you put in your bid for the dismantling,
I didn't tell them how I was going to do it.
And they didn't ask.
Well, they were so glad. And all I did is move my one machine over, but I didn't. That's all. They used to wonder, when was I going to start knocking it down? And then we knocked it down. There was no secret or anything. It was in one way. Imperial Oil would have hung us all. You know, because the tanks are all there. But it didn't bother them. It didn't even shift the ground there.
Were you also responsible for taking the rubble away?
Oh, you know, there was a huge, see where that is?
Yes.
Just ahead of it was a huge hole. That was our idea, to put it in that hole. And just, with a big dozer, just run it out and put a foot of sand or gravel. They had, we had one of the local guys hauling gravel and just push it.
So the elevator's still there, essentially?
Yeah, sure.
Just a bunch of rubble?
That's it, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I'm glad to hear that.
It's
sort of like it's in its own little graveyard.
Yeah, it's a graveyard with no stone.
Wouldn't want to plant a garden on it, though.
I don't think it would. I wouldn't do that. No, that's exactly, nothing was hauled off the site.
Did you, were you around then, or were people talking to you about what to take out of here? Because I know they took the old steam engine out of here.
Oh, no, that's a lot, that's early. That's when, I think that was even before I had the contract. But the guys from the power, what power is it in Winnipeg? Not Winnipeg, in Thunder Bay, Ontario Hydro.
Right.
This guy, I remember him from the bar, but we didn't talk anything about him. But he lives just over, if he's still around, he lived just over there in Westport. But
and what did he was responsible for taking it out?
No, or? He took that, and they've got it in a museum somewhere. It's a that was a fine unit, you know. It ran a whole elevator with ropes on wheels. Unbelievable. And him and a bunch of voluntary guys, they took it out in about a day and a half. So where it is, I don't know. I never paid much attention. Well, I wouldn't have, I would imagine we would have dragged it out of there. We wouldn't have blown it up, that's for sure. But they did. They took it out. I don't know where they put it.
It's in storage somewhere on Arthur Street, is what I understand.
Oh.
Because there's no place to display it.
Yeah, okay. But that's all I'm telling you, because I don't know any. I wonder where they did put it. I just wondered, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But it shouldn't have been destroyed, so it's on Arthur Street. I'm very pleased.
Anything else that you'd like to say about that job?
I don't know.
Did you ever blow up any other elevators?
No, I have just a few bridges and two things.
And Mr. Wazo?
Eh?
And Mr. Wazo, did he?
The Wazo? His son controlled demolitions, is the largest in the world today. His son really took to it. When I knew Jack, his son was at the University of Tennessee. And they really made a study of it. But it's a family company. His wife does it too. I've never met the son. I met Jack's brother. I met him, but.
So tell me, because we see these pictures here.
Yeah.
So tell me how that day unfolded for you, like on a personal basis. When did you get up? And how did the day end?
We were in the bar over at the hotel, and I think it was about 6:30. Walter Cronkite had it on. I had a tape on it, you know, the thing, and they were showing the whole thing. Well, this is what Jack was after. You could see his point of view. Not an insurance company in the world would turn him down now. We've always laughed about it.
Yeah. So did you get up early in the morning? Was it exciting when you got up? Were you apprehensive? What?
I said, well, we worked at it so long, you know, quietly, that it was kind of, yeah, quite normal.
What time of day?
It was when we said that. I think we let her go around 10:30, 11. 10:30 maybe, I don't know. It wasn't any big deal to us, to Jack. We knew where it was going to go.
So 2 minutes, it was all over? Or is that too long?
That's too long. It's all over in a minute. I mean, from the first bang to a minute. Once it started moving, it just came down like. But nothing went up to any degree, you know. And the helicopter was filming.
Was that your last involvement with an elevator then?
I'm just wondering. Yeah, I don't think I had no, I don't think I had involvement with an elevator over in Port Arthur, because they had scales, outside scales. And when I was extending the breakwater, you see, I had to weigh the stone from where I'm blasting, and right there is the lake, and and I asked them, could I use those scales? And they said, sure. They didn't even charge or nothing.
So you brought your trucks in where the scales are?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And no problem. They didn't. I expected to pay, but I'm not going to ask them. I said, send me a bill.
Now, breakwaters have something to do with the grain industry, too.
Who?
Breakwaters. Without the breakwaters, it would be pretty hard to conduct good shipping or loading at the lakefront elevators. So what was your involvement with the breakwater? What extension were you doing? Or was it repair?
Well, it was minor, actually. I'd say we had the, as you can see, we had the big marine equipment. And I didn't know, did I show you that?
Yes, you did, yeah.
But anyway, that was minor. I've been retired for over 20 years, you know.
Mm-hmm. You've got a great memory for somebody who's been retired that long.
Well, yeah, that's what scared me when you said, because I couldn't. I even had to ask my wife, when did I come here?
You did your homework.
I got right here, this paper. Bill Peach, Harry Olson, Jr.
Well.
1957 to 1960, CDL.
Now, just to tell you a little bit about what we're doing and also to ask you about what you might have, we're hoping to set up a grain elevator museum in town, and we currently have a request into the National Historic Sites and Monuments Board.
Yeah.
To have an elevator on the Cam River, Fort William Elevator F. It's called Western 10 now, but it's still operating. And it has a rope drive, or had a rope drive.
Did it?
Yeah,
I've seen it, but
yeah,
I've never
he's taken it out and replaced it with electricity.
Yeah,
but
it did have
he did have, and he kept the ropes, and all of the pulleys and things are still in the elevator.
Yeah.
So we've got that in the works, and we're hoping that we could use that as a center to show all the history,
yeah,
including the history of the elevators. I have a little chart that I keep called Elevators Up and Down,
yeah,
and so the building of them, and then, of course, this is a really important piece, the...
Knocking them down.
Knocking them down. I mean, it's, you know, you see the pictures of the crews, you know, hundreds of people building them up and two guys take one down. You know, it's sad in its way.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's what we're hoping to do. We hope we'll hear within the next few months whether we're successful. But regardless of that, we've got this project, and we now have about 175 people that we've interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
Sid Halter being one that you mentioned. And
did you get him?
Yes, we did.
But Sid died.
Just before. Yeah, he died about a year after we interviewed
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
yeah. And Mr. Parrish, who told us the story about how solid your elevator was. And we also have starting an archives of various photographs. So do you think you can track down your video that you have of the Cronkite piece?
It was like a Hollywood tape.
Yeah.
I haven't got it.
Do you think you've got it somewhere?
I gave it to my brother within a couple of months.
Yeah.
He wanted it, and he just went to Ottawa. But that film, apparently, the film does, if you don't keep it in the proper place, the film deteriorates because it's...
So it may not be around?
No copy
anymore?
Oh, it would never.
Oh, what a shame.
Because he would be carrying it. he just wanted to show somebody. Yes, he had a group and he
mm-hmm.
wanted to show. And he said he would send it back, but I didn't think
ask
about
for
it, because I did know that if you don't keep it in the proper
humidity and all of those things.
Humidity, and I didn't care about the damn
yeah.
thing.
So is he still around, your brother?
Yeah, but yeah, he's still around, but he wouldn't know what the hell
what you were talking about.
Oh, yes, he might. I don't know.
Well, could you ask him, just on the off chance that he didn't toss it away and it might be okay?
I can, I'll phone him. But
sure, just ask, you know.
I'll phone him and ask, but he'll laugh.
Yeah.
I know, but he wouldn't look after it. He wouldn't have a clue. He did the good old machine operator.
Yeah. So these are the only two photos you have of them.
And this, I and didn't, that. I didn't even know he had this.
Yeah.
But June had taken it.
Yeah. Well, this is from the Times Journal collection, so I think they...
I was going to say to you, these came from...
Times Journal.
Yeah, and you could, Times Journal could get them for you.
Yeah, I think there are still some. Now, if I can't track them down, I might ask you if we could borrow them to scan them.
If they...
But I'd rather not take them, and...
But if you can't... Yes,
yeah, I will let you know.
You can scan them and...
Yeah, return them to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Monica, any questions that you have to ask?
No.
And this article, I already have a copy of it, so that's
good.
Oh,
you have it.
I do, sure. I do, yeah. So we'll keep your little collection here. And anything you'd like to add?
Well, I hope you get your museum.
I do too. And you'll be in our invitees list to come and take a look of it. Then we might even have a place to put the steam engine.
You'd have to phone Hydro, wouldn't you?
I'd have to phone the gentleman. I can't remember his name now, but I've got it in my files.
But somebody would... They wouldn't give that away, you know.
No. They're looking for a place to put it on display.
Yeah.
I know they were trying to get the museum to do it, but the museum didn't have a space big enough.
Yeah, you got to have a fair size.
Yeah.
Who's they, Nancy?
About the steam engine?
Yeah, you said they were looking
he described it as a sort of a volunteer group that were interested in steam engines that managed, and they got a grant of $12,000 or something to go with it.
No, they got money from somebody.
Yeah,
but they would have probably, each guy would have picked up a few bucks.
I'm not certain. Like, they may have just left it because they were talking about having it used for putting the display together.
Well, they must have it. Because if they've got it in a warehouse somewhere, they got to be paying somebody for it.
Yes, right.
Nobody would give it, you know.
Unless somebody's volunteering the space, too. Could be in somebody's barn, for all we know.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I didn't follow up because there wasn't much I could do about it until we had a spot. Anyway, this is a great part of the history, and I really appreciate your agreeing to being interviewed. And we'll formally end the interview. And there we go. Stop.